Welcome to the Healthcare Advocacy Podcast. On this podcast, you'll hear stories to encourage, inspire, and empower you to be the best healthcare advocate that you can be for yourself or for a loved one. The information provided in this podcast is not to be used for any medical advice. This is for information only and to support you in your journey. Please consult with your physician and medical team. In fact, share your favorite episode with your team and ask questions from that.
Well, good morning and welcome to the Healthcare Advocacy Podcast. And today I would like to welcome our guest, Dr. Kirsten Palombaro, and she is an associate professor of physical therapy at Widener University. So welcome, Kirsten.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, so today I know we're going to talk a little bit about not so much a personal journey, but how to help patients and clients get the physical therapy services they need. And so why don't you talk a little bit about your experience and how we can help our patients?
Excellent. So I have been at Widener University for, I have to think now, probably since 2007. And I've been a full-time faculty person since 2010. And so Widener really has a strong focus on community engagement and community service. And that's one of the reasons I was really drawn to Widener as a potential faculty person, because in my own life, I went to a Jesuit university for my undergraduate degree. And Jesuit universities very much have focus on service learning and community engagement. And at the time, right, service learning was still kind of in its, you know, launching in its more infancy. It was in the 90s. And so there were service learning projects you could do, but not necessarily service learning courses like there are in universities now. But I definitely got that bug to serve my community in undergraduate. And so always tried to find ways as I was moving through clinical practice, whether it was just working at the hospital's wellness fair or volunteering to help with one of their lectures or things like that, where I could give back in some way to the community. And so when an opportunity opened up at a university that really had a community focus, I was really excited about that. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, that's a great decision, and using your beliefs and values to kind of guide your decisions there. I think that's wonderful. And then as far as how that service learning grew into more of the program or providing services for physical therapy, what does that look like?
So when I came to Widener University, one of my colleagues had come, I don't know, she was probably there maybe 6 months before I started working there in a part-time capacity. And she also really had a strong service learning bent. She herself had led students to work in the mountains of Mexico, providing physical therapy services to clients that wouldn't ordinarily be able to get services. And so she would go down once or twice a year and bring equipment and students and other therapists and do physical therapy trainings. And so we both felt really strongly about taking what was already in existence at Widener and moving it in a more positive direction. And so my colleague Jill Black and I took a look at the existing programming that was there. And so one of the programs that was running was a community health and wellness project. And I'm not quite, they called it a community education project at the time. It was the CEP. And it was all entirely on Widener's campus. And certainly a campus can be a community, but when your university is situated in an underserved area of the world, and Chester, Pennsylvania certainly is an underserved community, there is a significant portion of people living below the poverty level. There is a significant portion of people that are uninsured or underinsured. We really felt strongly that we could make something more meaningful for our students and also something meaningful for the community as well. And so it took about about 4 years. And so over the course of 4 years, we had a student that helped us identify community partners that might be interested in working with us. And she was very community minded. She actually helps out at Columbia University's pro bono clinic now. So she's still, you know, years after graduation, is committed as well to community service and pro bono healthcare. But she found us all of these organizations, and we kind of interviewed each of the organizations to see how they could, how what kinds of services they might need and how we could help them and if they were interested in that help, right? And some organizations had like a wide range of needs, and we could focus on one of the needs. And some organizations really had a lot of needs, but we would have been a burden on them to come every week and serve them. And so we identified three community partners at that point. And one was a housing unit that worked with clients who were visually impaired, low-income seniors, or people that used motorized wheelchairs. So it was a very varied population that lived at this housing complex. And we identified an after-school program that was run at a local church. And we identified our child development center that Widener runs. It has a preschool and kindergarten component, and it's for faculty and staff of people at Widener, but also people in the community. So it was a mix of people. And so we started with those three sites, and we were sending students, and we let students choose which site they wanted to go. And for a while, we let the students rotate through all the sites before they could pick. And so in the early years, we were just excited to have community partner sites that wanted us and that we could make an impact for. And so we started after school physical activity programming for the two school-based places. And then we started a general seated exercise program at the housing complex. And at that point, the students were really enthusiastic about that. And so we started seeking further community partners at that point. So that would have been in like 2009, 2010. And so at this point, over the past 10 years, we've basically, students come in, we assign them to a site. They don't get to choose anymore because it's just too hard. Mm-hmm. And they start at that site right away when they come in to our program. And the programming runs every week during the academic year. And the students go out about three times a semester, because otherwise there's too many students at the site. We have too high of a student to participant ratio at that point. And the students work through across the five semesters that they're on campus with the community partner, and providing the exercising programming, but also they, at the end of their first year, they decide what things they want to focus on for the next year. They get input from the class ahead of them. And so they set goals and objectives for the following year, and they design and tweak their program to help them to meet those goals and objectives. So they learn a little bit about community programming and how to effectively design and evaluate that.
Wow, that's amazing, Kirsten. That's how exciting to see that program grow, and something, just a very simple idea that you and Jill had, to grow it into something that really is making an impact in your area. Yeah. That's so exciting.
Yeah.
Wow. So this is interesting that it sounds like you guys are taking more of that wellness approach. Does your clinic or your clinic sites do any direct treatments, or it's all more kind of preventative, or just not kind of treating a specific illness or specific problem?
So our community health projects are all more wellness-based and physical activity promoting. And at the same time, our students, when we both first started at Widener, we're going a couple times a year to a pro bono clinic that was being run in West Philadelphia. And West Philadelphia and Chester have somewhat similar demographics. If you look at census data, they're somewhat similar, at least the area where this clinic was. And our students started coming back to us and saying, hey, why don't we just do this in Chester? And that was kind of interesting, right? Because as a faculty person, sometimes you're so focused on the thing that you're doing, and then a student will come and put this little bug in your ear, and you haven't even considered that. And so that would have been in like 2008. And so Jill and I took two students to a conference. It was in March in Omaha, Nebraska. I've never been so cold in my entire life. And we went to this student-run conference for student-run free clinics.
Oh.
And it was definitely more medical school-based. There weren't really many physical therapy programs at that point. It certainly has changed over time. But we really made a decision that each one of us would attend different sessions, and then we would reconvene and talk about what we had learned. And at a layover in the airport in Ohio, we sketched out a plan for a pro bono clinic that would be student run with supervision from licensed PTs. And so we created a student board that would be in charge. Each position would be in charge of one aspect of clinic. So there's a clinic director or supervisor, and then there are various roles like client scheduler and student scheduler and supervising physical therapist scheduler, and then also like an outcomes coordinator and things like that. And so each layer of class has a student board, so there's always people in charge even when students are out on their clinical experiences. So we launched our clinic in September of 2009. So our clinic's been running now for 10 plus years. And we started just opening like twice a week. We weren't really sure if we'd get clients right away. You know, we had heard from other people running pro bono services that you might not get clients at all for the first month or two, but we started getting clients right away. And at this point, our clinic space is really crowded, which is a good it's a good problem to have, right? That our services are needed and people are figuring out how to access our services. Our marketing students, you know, go out to local physicians and also to local physical therapy clinics. We really make it clear that we're not in competition with them. We're there to help alleviate their burden of pro bono care. A lot of our clients are underinsured. They've maxed out their PT visits, or they can't afford their copay. If it's a copay issue, we always call the clinic and say, would you be willing to waive the copay? So that's our first step, right? And if they say yes, great, then problem solved. And if they say no, then the client can come to us. So we make sure that the, you know, if the client has insurance that hasn't been used up, we make sure that they go to the appropriate place. So we're not in competition with people we're then asking to take our students for clinical experiences, right? That's right. Not really our intention, is to be a competitor. And so we at this point have added occupational therapy services over the past several years. So two OT faculty from a neighboring university started bringing their students once a month. And this year we have our first occupational therapy class at Widener, and those two faculty actually have moved over to faculty positions at Widener, so they're well used to our clinic, and so we will have a more integrated occupational therapy experience for our students too.
That is amazing. There's so many things that you just said there that I love. One of the biggest things is I'm also in a lot of entrepreneur circles is how the private practice PTs are saying, we don't get any of this training in school, how to run a business, how to be thinking about all of those pieces. Or even if you work at a clinic or you do home care, you don't get really that experience of truly managing all those layers. And you guys have completely designed your program, not only for the benefit of your students, but also for your community. I have just such a good feeling right now listening to you talk. that's very unique. So, I mean, when I went to Marquette, which is also a Jesuit school, we did not have, the ATC program had some sort of community-based and the dentistry program had one, but PT did not. Yeah. Now they do, and I haven't been back to see what exactly they're doing, but I would imagine it sounds very similar, I would hope, to what you guys have.
Yeah.
And they also...
Yeah. It's kind of interesting because our students serve as ambassadors. So other programs will contact our students. And so their students will say, how do we set this up?
Yes.
It's very exciting. There's a pro bono network. And so schools can be part of that network. And so that's great because schools are at very, you know, different schools have different ways of doing this. Some of it might be twice a week or a semester long experience. Some schools have multiple opportunities for students. And it's really great for each of the groups of students to talk to each other and get a sense of what everybody's doing. But it's been great for our students to kind of say, you know, this is the model that we use and have other schools kind of adopt our model.
That's great. That pro bono network, if we have anybody from a university or a student listening right now, how do they find more about that?
Let me get you the link to that.
You know what you can do as well? You can send it to me and then I can put it in the show notes afterwards.
Okay.
So not a problem, but Kirsten's going to get us that link so you can get hooked up with that. I think what a wonderful resource there for faculty and current PT students. But as far as patients who are looking for pro bono therapy services, you can, you know, speak to PT, but I would imagine this exists someplace for OT and speech more so. How would a patient kind of go about looking for these services in their community?
So I think one of the best ways to start is if they have a university nearby that has a PT program or an OT program or speech program, is to contact that program and to see what they have. The pro bono network, I looked at the website to make sure I wasn't gonna misspeak. It's theprobononetwork.com.
Okay.
And that lists all of the member schools, and the member schools do include other health professions as well. And so that's a good first step, is if you do have university in your community, to start there. Obviously, I live in Philadelphia area, and so we have a lot of universities with PT and OT and physician assistant and speech. So certainly an area that's dense in universities is going to be a lot more useful than areas that aren't. The other thing that they could do is just potentially call a clinic and see if, especially if it's an issue of copay. I mean, we had somebody with a copay that was astronomical. It was like $150 a visit. I mean, and if you don't understand what physical therapy can do for you also, right, that doesn't sound like a lot of value, right? You know, the public doesn't always understand what we do. We're just exercising with them. And so that can be very hard to convince somebody that even to come in for one visit for us to evaluate you. So contacting your local clinic and asking if they take a pro bono caseload. We were called by our professional organization, the American Physical Therapy Association, to provide pro bono services and advocate for the healthcare needs of society. And there are many ways to donate your time, right? You know, taking on pro bono clients at your clinic is just one of many. Giving, you know, talks in the community is a different way to provide services. But you don't know unless you ask. And it might be that that clinic can't help you, but another, you know, if they know somebody at a different clinic that would. And so that you just have to ask.
Yeah. Great. Excellent. That's great advice. So looking at our healthcare system as a whole, what do you see needing to change? Obviously you're taking steps already to make change here. Yeah. And to give students an opportunity to see how their ideas can impact the community, which is great. But overall, yeah. What is something you would like to see different?
Well, I definitely have the mindset that our healthcare system is somewhat broken for both patients and perhaps even the people working in the healthcare system, right? We read a lot about burnout in healthcare workers and just the due to excessive hours they have to work, you know, patients coming in more and more complex because they're, you know, uninsured or underinsured and not necessarily taking care of themselves or able to take care of themselves. They can't afford their high blood pressure medicine. And so now they've had a stroke or consequences such as, you know, uncontrolled diabetes. And so I do not have the skill set in which to design such a vast plan, but I really do wish that the United States would go to a single payer health system. You know, that's not in my skill set to design such a program. So, you know, the government is not going to call me up and say, hey, you know, how would you design the single payer health system? But while I'm passionate about pro bono care, and the pro bono care that my students provide, the pro bono care that I provide at a clinic that runs on Sundays, I feel that pro bono care is a Band-Aid. And so it's a necessary Band-Aid for right now, because there are so many people that are uninsured and underinsured and need care. But I was reading an article the other day about, I think it was in Las Vegas, where they were, instead of paying your parking ticket with money, you could pay with school supplies like crayons and markers. And, you know, I was like, well, that's great, right? Because the school gets supplies they need, but you could fund the school, right? That there's like a different idea, right? That right. This is a Band-Aid.
Yes.
And I feel the same way about pro bono care, that I'm very passionate about pro bono care. And yet I recognize that what would be better is for every person living in the United States to actually have access to high quality healthcare.
Absolutely. No, that's true. I've always thought that healthcare across the board should be nonprofit.
Yes.
Why are we making a profit? Why are these CEOs earning so much money off of somebody's illness?
Right, absolutely. And I have found, even my older daughter had been ill for a while, and we were trying to get coverage for a specific treatment that she needed. That was going to be expensive out of pocket. And despite the fact that we had insurance, we couldn't even get a denial of our services. Like, we weren't getting an answer back from the health insurance company. And eventually we couldn't wait any longer. We just paid for it out of pocket. And we were lucky that we had the resources to do that. And we both said, where would we be if we didn't have that? You know, it really hit home that, you know, I know intellectually that people cannot afford healthcare that they need. But when you know that you just happen to have gotten lucky that you could afford that, it really, you know, recognizes the privileged position that I come from. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a lot to think about. And I don't know, maybe the government should actually come to speak to you about problems. I think you actually would have quite a lot to offer them, as many of the people that we talk with. Anyway, so we'll be wrapping up here, but you know, what you're doing out there, Kirsten, is amazing. And as you were talking to you, I was thinking about other ways you can expand in the future. Of course, the age of telehealth and virtual visits is coming up. So I'm a big proponent of telehealth. So if you ever want some ideas about that, I've got experience.
I would love ideas about that.
but that's definitely a way to even further expand your reach to communities that might be outside of Chester, but inside Pennsylvania. And even for families who might not be able to get somebody to the clinic, you know, telehealth is another way to reach people. Anyway, just my little plug.
Yes.
you mentioned something about, you know, working with your daughter and having some illness that she was going through. I would imagine that, you know, it's important for you to take care of yourself and for you to have some good self-care. Can you speak a little bit about ways that you do that for yourself?
Absolutely. So I have been a runner since I was 9. And so running is definitely for me, it's kind of like meditation in motion. And so I can always tell when, you know, when I am getting particularly cranky or burnout, that if I do not get out for a run that day, it will be catastrophic for every person that comes in contact with me, right? That it's good for head clearing. I definitely think more clearly after a good run. And I've recently returned to the sport of rowing after a, I think, 27-ish year hiatus. And so that's been really fun to get out there on the water, because you really actually can't think about anything when you're rowing, because there are so many moving parts. It's kind of like this head emptying exercise. And so I definitely find that for me, like this meditation in motion is helpful. I also am a practicing Quaker, so Quaker meeting and sitting in silence once a week is definitely important, and helps me kind of start my week in a centered sort of way. So, yeah.
Excellent. Yesterday I just finished a resource for parents on how to help their kids deal with emotional regulation. And I think number one actually was to have a time of silence, like request that we have silence, no devices, no phone, no talking, just so. That was actually number one on my list. So
it's so important, you know, in Quaker meeting for children, they go to like a first day school thing, and they join you for the last 15 minutes, because an hour for a child would just probably be challenging for everybody there. But my children definitely appreciate that silence. You know, they are not antsy, you know, and my children are normal children, right? So they are in general, they like to move their bodies and they like to chit chat. But they definitely appreciate that silence as well.
Absolutely.
So I would totally agree with that.
How wonderful. Amanda Painter, she's a physical therapist who has a podcast on rowing. So maybe you'd be interested in, she'll be a guest coming up here soon. So anyway, just connect everybody together. I think the big takeaway there is, one, take some time for yourself, whatever you enjoy, but especially if it's an activity where you can have that time to just clear your head. And there's so many different activities that you can choose, but you've found some great ones that work for your life.
Yes.
Wonderful. Is there anything else you'd like to add today, Kirsten?
No, I mean, thank you for having me on.
Yeah, and definitely send me the links to your clinic sites, and I'll post those. And anything else that you would like our guests to have access to, we'll get that up on the show notes. So thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you guys, talk with you guys another day. Thanks.